It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The New York Times has published thousands of obituaries in its over century existence, but until recently, only a fraction chronicled the lives of women or people of color. We explore a new book that features dozens of obituaries of exceptional people whose deaths went unreported in the newspaper. And you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share comments. The number is 800-642-1234 to talk. Email ideas at WPR.org. Amy Padnani is an editor on the New York Times Obituaries Desk. Padnani and members of the Obituaries Desk are the authors of this new book. It's called Overlooked, a celebration of remarkable, underappreciated people who broke the rules and changed the world. Amy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
So when you review the New York Times archives of obituaries, you go into that room where there are boxes and boxes. What are some of the most surprising omissions, or what takes you by surprise?
Yeah, some of the most surprising ones have been the brilliant poet Sylvia Plath, whom we referred to as Mrs. Ted Rogers? No, I'm forgetting her husband's name now off the top of my head. But we refer to her by her husband's name. There was Ida B. Wells, the pioneering investigative journalist who started a campaign against lynching. We had a front page notice about her wedding, but nothing about her death. And then, of course, Alan Turing, the brilliant computer programmer who helped decode German messages to end World War II. He did not receive a Times obituary either. And so those are some of the most surprising, but there are also some really delightful ones of underdogs and suffragists and, you know, people who invented things that just slipped under the radar.
And I bet it's kind of frustrating because you don't know the missing piece. You don't know why those editorial decisions were made, you know, decades, over a century ago, because you weren't there. You weren't in the room. So there is that kind of mystery of why these people weren't recognized.
Yeah, that's right. With Sylvia Plath, I think she wasn't as popular. Ted Hughes was his name. She wasn't as popular, until after her death, is my guess. She, in fact, had been rejected again and again for her work. And so I think that contributed a bit to her demise. So it's possible that she just wasn't as well known. Alan Turing, I'm guessing that, you know, we were more focused on U.S. news and of course he was British, but, you know, really, I'm just guessing here. We really have no clue as to what was going on. We didn't always have an obituaries desk, which is also maybe part of the reason. It was up to individual desks to write obituaries in their subject areas. And so that could have contributed to it as well.
A new obituary in the book mentions Wisconsin for the trailblazing composer and artist Sorrel Hayes, who earned a master's degree in music from UW-Madison. And Sorrel Hayes advocated for gender parity and worked across genres. And one of her best regarded pieces is Celebration of No.
No, 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 no!
Honey!
No!
Nie!
Nongmal an de!
Zwei, una!
No!
Hai!
Ho wan han!
No!
Bie pang wo!
No!
No!
So that is an excerpt of Celebration of No from Beyond Violence, part of the album Voicings for Tape Soprano Piano. What should we know about the accomplishments of Sorrel Hayes?
Well, I really love that piece. I mean, it's maybe bizarre at first to listen to, but it was just really creative. She took 21 women's voices speaking No in different languages and then put them together. She was a technical mastermind. She had so much equipment that she used to create these works. She also was known for performance art. She was a pianist and she would rig her piano so that when she pressed keys, there'd be things lighting up. She would have balloons by her piano and she'd randomly take out a BB gun and start shooting them in the middle of the performance. And she was interactive too. She had, it was some kind of mic that she would pass around the audience. And there was a little girl she remembered who spoke into it. And when she did, she had the voice of a giant. And so really, really creative.
We're talking with Amy Padnani, editor on the obituaries desk at the New York Times. New book is called Overlooked. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Amy, how does the modern New York Times decide which lives deserve recognition in the obituary section?
You know, it's not easy. We get pitches every day from readers. We look at other news organizations to see who they've covered. We hear from our foreign correspondents. We collect names in all kinds of ways. But we're a really limited desk. We're tiny, and we only have so many writers. And so we have to be really selective in who we choose to write about. So we look for those who really kind of left an imprint on the world. You know, we ask questions. How did they shape the world that we live in? How did they change the way of life for society or a group of people? And also, will readers be interested in this story?
You know, looking at some of the obituaries in the book, they're more recent. Sorrel Hayes passing away in 2020, the dancer Raka Razmi in 2018. Does the Times still struggle to highlight pioneers?
I would say so. Yeah, there are still moments people slip through the cracks, and I'm not entirely sure why, even though I'm actually here now. Sometimes we really just don't hear about them. But we are making efforts to reach out to other readers, people who are not normally subscribers of the New York Times, and other communities to let us know about important people who die.
Terry Rogers, someone you really would want to talk about here, the life of a transgender ventriloquist recounted in Overlooked, highlighted on the cover. And we're going to listen to a part of a 1974 television appearance featuring Terry Rogers and her doll Shorty.
You mean to say you wait until we're in front of all these people to tell me my cat is dead?
Well, it is dead. It's dead as a doll now. I saw it myself, didn't I?
But you don't go up to people and say your cat's dead.
Oh, I bloody do.
Well, you're not supposed to.
No.
No,
why not?
Well, it hurts their feelings.
Sure.
Can you have broken it to me quietly? Your cat's dead.
Wow, hear that rapid back and forth. Amy, what do you appreciate about Terry Rogers?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So Terry was a transgender ventriloquist. And as you noted yourself, that rapid back and forth, I mean, if you watch that clip, her lips don't move at all. I mean, I know these are very basic ventriloquist things, but as a regular person watching this, I'm just so blown away. She had this wonderful vocal range, so she could pull off Shorty's voice and her own easily, and just a master of puppetry. She actually got her start in magic. She was kind of a loner growing up and would watch these variety shows and was very entertained and bought a little book from Woolworths about magic and ventriloquism.
A 6-cent brochure was it said in the obituary.
That's right. And just started teaching herself. And so she was also transgender, but it was kind of an open secret. You know, she had watched the career of another ventriloquist go downhill after that person was outed. And so she, you know, didn't hide it, but also didn't talk about it. And so I really love that she was, I mean, despite not talking about it, she really was truly her authentic self, despite not always being accepted for who she was.
There's this passage in the obituary. She built her act about the ladylike operator of a male doll with license to insult the world. And I just paused there because it perhaps did open up an ability to say things that maybe Terry Rogers couldn't have said otherwise.
I love that insight. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And the fact that the doll was originally a female doll converted into a male doll also speaks volume.
You know, it seems like news outlets are always racing to be first in announcing a death and a prominent death. But what verification steps do you take to ensure someone is actually deceased?
Yeah, so in every single obituary, we have a sentence or a paragraph that we call the confirmation. So we have to reach out to a family member, an agent, some representative who knew the person who can confirm the death. And so this is really important to us. You don't want to accidentally say someone is gone when they're not. It's like one of the most embarrassing things a newspaper can do. And this actually happened to us some time ago. There was a professional prankster named Alan Abel who faked his own death as a way to to prank the New York Times. He set up landlines with funeral homes, had his crying wife call in, and we ran his obituary. The next day, he had a news conference to say, ha-ha, New York Times, I'm still alive. And so when he died just a few years ago, we printed with that obituary, the original obit that we had written, I think, in the 90s. And we all looked at each other and said, is he really dead this time? Like, can we see the body? Is there any way to find out for sure? So we were very playful with the headline and we said, Alan, a professional hoaxer, is dead, at least we think.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, it seems like the confirmation sentence is just one line, but the rest is a celebration of a person's life. It is a rich look into what someone lived.
Yeah, I get this all the time from friends or people I meet when I tell them what I do. They say, oh my gosh, isn't that a depressing job? You work on obituaries. And I tell them the same thing. I'm like, only one line in the story is about death. The rest is about their life. And it's really, you know, it is really poignant when you get to know this person, you know, both with regular obituaries and overlooked. Overlooked, it might be a little bit, you know, they're more distant. They died a long time ago in some instances. And so, you know, you feel a little bit sad at one point because you never get to meet the person you spent so much time getting to know.
Well, let's pause right there with Amy Poddani, editor of the New York Times Obituaries Death, author of the new book Overlooked. You can join in. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the lives of extraordinary people in history whose deaths were not reported by the New York Times until now. The new book is called Overlooked. This project at the obituaries desk is ongoing. Who is the Times missed in Wisconsin? Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Amy Poddani, who is editor on the New York Times obituaries desk and stays with us. New book is called Overlooked. Let's bring in Cheryl in Watertown. Cheryl, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi, I just, first of all, I love this station and I love listening to all of the beautiful programs you have, but I really wanted to agree with Susanna in, as an ordained minister, I think a lot of people find it unusual that what I like to really perform the most is funerals. And to her point, you know, one sentence is about the loss and the rest of what we're sharing is about the life and all of the experiences of the individual, you know, that has now gone. So I just love the way she put that. And I wanted to just share that.
Cheryl, thank you so much in finding a parallel there. Amy, what do you make of that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I never really thought about it the same way for funerals, just because I imagine often the person is in the room and, you know, people are gathering in a time of mourning. But I really love that perspective. It is true that when people gather, they're all talking about anecdotes about the person's life and what they remember best about them. So, yeah, that's really touching.
And I really do like how obituaries package that, almost package it, if you will, as the word, but in just this beautiful collection of words and kind of just going through some highlights, but also having some of these little aha moments, which is what I love reading in obituaries.
Yeah, I really value how we bring out the complexity of what it's like to be a human being. You know, there are moments you'll see where not everything is peachy keen in their lives. They may have had struggle of their own. you know, that they processed in ways that are less than desirable. And we include all of that because it's what makes us who we are.
One obituary in the book describes the child psychologist Margaret McFarland, who mentored Fred Rogers, the legendary Mr. Rogers neighborhoods. So here's McFarland talking with Rogers in 1967 about the show trying to establish real communication with children.
And I think that's the reason when the children see you, they run up to you and throw their arms around your legs and call you my Mr. Rogers and anticipate that you would recognize them as they recognize you. And that's the only way I understand that, is that to the child, the television program between you and the child is a real relationship, and that you are speaking to the child.
Oh, that recording is from the website for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Amy, what contributions did McFarland make to breakthroughs in children's television?
Well, she was the one who suggested that he be on camera.
Wow.
He originally was kind of behind the scenes using puppets and whatnot, but she saw something in him, some sort of charisma, and she said, no, you should be out in front. And so I would say that's a huge contribution. And she also made suggestions to the show over 20 years. They met regularly for sessions. He would furiously take handwritten notes, and they would go over songs and other, skits that were on the show.
And Margaret McFarland was basically content to avoid the spotlight, wanted to remain in the background.
That's right. Yeah. I think there was one moment in the obituary where it describes celebrating her birthday, and a group of people wanted to take her to lunch, and she really refused. She said, no, you can all come to my home, where she cooked lunch for everybody. And she never wanted to be the highlight of everything, of anything. She just stayed in the background and helped people as much as she could as a child psychologist.
One little fascinating thing I learned in that obituary is Daniel Tiger's neighborhood. Margaret Tiger, Daniel Tiger's younger sister in the cartoon. I learned in the obit they picked the name Margaret in honor of her, in honor of McFarland.
Yeah, that's right. And even when she died, Mr. Rogers himself wrote a tribute to her. And so I think a lot of people acknowledge the work that she did, even though she was behind the scenes.
How did you feel realizing that the New York Times can neglect the lives of people now regarded as pioneers and leaders and, other notable figures in history? What does that feel like when you're doing this work day in and day out?
It's tough. I mean, myself being the daughter of Indian immigrants, a woman of color, I really want to see myself, people like me, represented in our pages. And so, that was ultimately what got me started on this project, was thinking about how we can diversify our coverage. It can be upsetting sometimes. Some of these people led such beautiful lives, and their stories deserve to be told. And so I'm really grateful to have this outlet now to tell their stories retrospectively.
And you say that just as our society keeps evolving, that obituaries will keep evolving. What do you mean by that? I mean, how will obituaries continue to change?
Yeah, well, naturally, as time passes, women and people of color are making more of a difference. They're louder. They're part of the conversation in a way that they may not have been 100 years ago. 100 years ago, a lot of the stories in this book, for instance, are about fight, suffragists and activists fighting for the right to vote and whatnot. Today, that's not our fight, but there are still fights. And so I think that, we'll always see the struggle, unfortunately. I mean, looking back in history, you see how much we have in common with what we're faced with today. But I think that voices are louder, and we will see more of these people being featured in the spotlight.
Amy Podnotti is an editor on the New York Times Obituaries desk, talking about this new book, Overlooked, recounts the lives of remarkable people whose deaths went unreported by the New York Times. This project, Overlooked, ongoing. You can join in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. The book includes an obituary for the first person to survive going over Niagara Falls in a barrel in 1901. So what did you find fascinating about the life of Annie Edson Taylor?
Everything. So she was like an etiquette school teacher. She wasn't quite making it. She really wanted this sort of get rich quick scheme, and learned that nobody had gone over Niagara Falls in a barrel and survived. People had tried it, but they didn't make it. And so she decided to do it for her 60th birthday. It was the World's Fair. And, you know, she had her barrel custom built with air pockets and whatnot. And she made it. I mean, she was a little beat up at the end. They pulled her out of the barrel. She was clutching a waterlogged pillow and had a cut on her forehead and was shaken up. But she did it. And so then she went on tour. She wrote a book. She would do talks about her experience. She never quite got rich, however. That was unfortunate. At one point, she was even held up, and she told the robbers, you know, blow away. I'd rather be without my brains than without my money.
Wow.
Everything about her I thought was so interesting, and her age was certainly a factor for that, too.
It was interesting, too, to look at the pictures in this book. And there is this archival picture of Annie Edson Taylor, I guess, as she's being pulled out of the water and walking over a rock. And I guess you feel much closer to the history to see what the expression on their face was like, even.
Yeah, I think that moment was so key, just of what it was actually like. I mean, it can sound glamorous, perhaps, or, you know, daring, but in actuality, this is the truth. It was scary.
Well, let's move on to the motorcycle queen of Miami, Bessie Stringfield, known for riding a Harley and inspiring folklore about her travels around the country. And then one story describes Stringfield, who is a Black, outrunning an angry white mob. How is she regarded by motorcyclists today?
Yeah, I think that she was really brave. I mean, she was roaring on her motorcycle through the Jim Crow South, doing tricks, you know, regaling neighborhood children of all her, you know, daring feats. And so I think even today, she's just a marvel. How did she manage to do this and be so brave? And, you know, I think that there are a lot of Black motorcyclists who don't get attention today, and she managed to get it in her day. And so she's just someone they look up to.
Do you have any tips for writing an obituary, whether it is your own or whether it is for a loved one?
I'm glad you said that, because, you know, when doing this research, Bessie Stringfield, even, for instance, she lied about her life a lot, where she was from, who her parents were, what her ethnicity was. And we uncovered the facts from, you know, birth certificates, death records and whatnot. And we run into this a lot. There are some people who are pitched for Overlooked who I think are absolutely fascinating and worthy, but I can't find anything about where they were born and who their parents were. And so I often suggest, I know it may sound morbid, but I often suggest that people write their own obituary or leave letters or journals behind, because you just never know who's going to be looking for you in, say, 100 years. But yeah, I think including all of those basic facts, which may sound perhaps dry, but they are so important and key to a person's life, what their upbringing was like. You know, you may feel like you haven't done anything amazing, but somebody else may. And so I would just write it all down, everything that you've done, whatever you're proud of, where you went to school.
Just document.
Yep.
Amy, thank you so much for this work. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Amy Padnani is an editor on the New York Times Obituaries Desk, author of the new book Overlooked, a celebration of remarkable, underappreciated people who broke the rules and changed the world. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.